Help keep our community safe and healthy during National Prescription Drug Takeback Day, October 25th. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeback.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent drug misuse before it starts.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and as ever, we are back to preview this weekend's 2024 Australian Grand Prix. And when I say we, that of course means the usual trio, Mr. Timo Albers-Daly and Miss Ellie Taylor, Ellie Mae Taylor, joining me. How are you both this evening?
What have you got against the May?
I don't know, I completely dropped that one. I've had a very busy day. I've already been staring at a screen for the best part of 8 hours. I'm staring at it again for another 2.5, I should think, this evening.
Shame. I'm good, thank you, though.
That's good. Timo?
Yeah, perfectly dandy. Thank you very much. I have not been staring at a screen all day, so I am fresh-faced and bushy-tailed and looking forward to the spiritual start of the Formula 1 2024 season. As we know, the other two races don't count towards anything, so this is where it actually kicks off.
It does feel like this is where the season's supposed to kick off.
It feels better. It feels right.
It feels, yeah, I don't know, there's something about Australia which has always been very much the sort of the home of the start of the F1 season while we've been alive.
Next year will feel perfect for them, because we actually do get it. There's something weirdly satisfying, only for Australia though, for getting up at a silly time in the morning to watch F1, but it only kind of gets away with it because it's the start of a season, whereas now it's still acceptable, but you're kind of annoyed it's the third round.
I'm glad it's this weekend though, and not next weekend, because we've got British summertime starting the weekend after next. So could you imagine of getting up at 4 a.m. but also losing an hour of sleep as well as, so that the clocks can go forward? I'd die.
Trick to that, Ellie May, is you just don't sleep. You choose this weekend to finally get into the feeder series, and then you just do two all-nighters, then you're not going to get sleep anyway. And hey presto, problem solved.
I'd argue that, if anything, I've got it the best of anyone, because I've got 3 days at the NEC in Birmingham for the restoration show, so I won't actually be watching any of this Grand Prix or the feeder series action till about 10 p.m. on Monday, 10 a.m. on Monday. So,
in some respects, you could say that is a better way of doing it, though, because you don't have to worry about a lack of sleep, because you should, in theory, sleep normally. So exactly. You should be fine.
I get all the wins.
It sounded like you were complaining there, so I wasn't sure which way you were taking it out.
I'm saying I've got the best of both worlds here. I still get to enjoy the Grand Prix. I'll just turn off all F1-based notifications through my phone.
Disable
everything.
Yeah, disable everything. Spend 3 days fixing my car in a big hall in Birmingham and then enjoy the Grand Prix in my own leisure afterwards, which is sort of the way F1 is shifting to be, given the sort of regularity of the results we're seeing and the predictability of them to a certain extent. But that doesn't mean the news is predictable. And of course, the news is where we must start, of course, with the FIA Ethics Committee once again.
Yes, fun news, guys, fun news. FIA Ethics Committee have said that they found no evidence to substantiate the allegations of interference by MBS, which, not terribly surprising considering it was a story that seemed to come out of nowhere, and the fact that it took as long as it did. If it was that serious, why did it take nearly a year, if not just about a year, working on dates there for it to come out in the first place? And it was kind of an odd thing to come out anyway. And the timing seemed a bit suspicious, a bit in the same way that if I'm going to win my tinfoil hat, in the same way that the Lewis to Ferrari news was conveniently the day after Andretti were announced and would be denied entry to F1 to distract from that. This seems to be maybe trying to distract from the whole Red Bull situation. But again, who knows? It could just be a pure coincidence, because those things do happen, probably. But it was also just a bit of an odd story in itself, because Alonso arguably at that point last year didn't need help to get on the podium. He would have just taken the penalty on board and gone on with it and still driven back up to, what was it, third place that he was on at that point. So again, just a very odd story, but just kind of reiterates what Lewis has been saying recently about how this has all seemed a bit messy generally, of all the stuff going on inside F1. It seems messy from the inside, never mind the outside, where it does seem very messy indeed.
It's one of those storylines where, again, we kind of need more information.
It's like that statement that came out from, was it also the FIA, about the Horner stuff, where basically they had this whole statement saying nothing, essentially. And you're like, well, that was really worth a statement to just, you might as well have just continued saying nothing because you're not doing anything. You're not going to do anything. And you never really intended to do anything. But just so you guys know, we're not doing anything. But you knew that because we weren't doing anything.
It's not a great aspect for F1 and the FIA to sit under. It's not a great viewpoint. And the fact that it seems messy, it seems uncontrolled, and it seems that left doesn't know what the right is saying. And almost in a historical sense, we're shifting back to sort of the Drivers' Alliance and Formula One itself sort of splitting apart and sort of having these fractious groups within the sport, causing further problems. And the fact that all of a sudden so many of these major incidents that have reared their head at the start of the season have been swept under the rug so readily by the sport as well, does sort of add fuel to the fire.
You've got to focus on the show, regardless of how dull the show might be at the moment. That's the that's where they want you to have a look, have the attention. They don't want to look at anything remotely negative, and you see that a lot with the coverage as well. You could get someone saying something even slightly, not even controversial, just saying that maybe this wasn't the most exciting race. I think Brundle said that about Bahrain, and oh no, you can't, you don't really hear that repeated by anyone because everyone's saying, oh, what a great season opener that was. And it's like, can we not criticize it a little bit and actually talk about things that matter rather than just here's some random story about something that ultimately we don't know what the truth of the matter is. And if it is such a big deal, why are you not being transparent about it? It's like, if you haven't found any evidence, how did you go through that process? You need a better PR person at least to convince everyone there's nothing fishy going on, because we are in that kind of period of history where facts do matter, and everything, even if it is 100% true, it gets doubted anyway. So you might as well try and make a convincing job of it rather than just doing whatever this is.
It certainly leads to this idea that there's something else going on, that this is almost sort of putting pay to try and make us look away from. And even if it is,
seems very show in terms of look at my eyes. Yeah, hopefully that works.
In a way to try and convince us that the season is interesting, but so far we haven't really been supplied with evidence to the contrary. So at this point, with no evidence to substantiate the allegations that the season is interesting, we're going to have to simply dismiss that and move on, do something
we
else.
We can neither confirm nor deny anything.
But something else where there hasn't been really enough recent evidence and has been dismissed, or rather lifted, we're talking about Nikita Mazepin once again. He's sort of not necessarily reared his head in the news, but it's worth keeping an eye on this one, because following a review of EU sanctions, the organisation felt that it could no longer justify having Nikita on the list of excluded citizens. I haven't seen word on their view of his father mind, but they've essentially said, look, it's just his kid. They don't actually have any business dealings together. Nikita's, what he does with his racing and what he does as a person doesn't actually impact or isn't impacted by what his father does. So at this point, it's relatively unfair to sort of criticize him for his father's actions. Fair enough. We can criticize Nikita still for his own actions.
He's perfectly capable of being a dickhead by himself. So
this is still very much the argument. He's still very much capable of having his own actions thrown back at him, and that this doesn't sort of sweep those under the table. This simply with like to Russian invasion of Ukraine, which doesn't really make the headlines.
You firstly didn't have ties to invading another country, so we're going to take you off this list. But you're still not a great person. But yes, you know, do with that what you will.
This is essentially the situation they've reached to, but it opens the door for him to get back into F1. But at this point, I think he's a bit of a tarred brush, and I doubt any team would take him back. So it's sort of
tarred brush is probably the nicest thing he's been called in quite a while. You might get a phone call asking to be interviewed for
maybe. But the fact of the matter is that I think he's done enough for his reputation that I don't think that phone is going to be calling anytime soon. So sort of a non-go of a story, really, but worth sort of keeping an eye on in some regards. The more interesting news, however, is rumours of Adrian Newey moving to Ferrari, and the rumour mill there churns ever faster. And there's a strong chance he could make this move. The ongoing power struggle at the outfit beyond the wandering hands of its principal isn't a situation that's known to be favourable to Newey. And with Hamilton on board, plus the strong-looking leadership of Fred Vasseur, it's becoming a very appealing prospect for him to make the move. At the moment, Red Bull are almost trying to sort of sideline him onto one of their hypercar projects. They don't want him near the F1 stuff, it seems, which doesn't make sense because he's been reportedly the mastermind behind the vast majority of it. So if all of a sudden he's being sidelined from major projects because of allegiances within the team,
it does seem very reminiscent of Lewis trying to get these things from Mercedes in terms of like the out of race stuff and kind of the organizations and actions that he was trying to get support for and being ambassador and all this kind of stuff to help them as much as himself in a lot of ways. And Adrian's been doing the same thing, and it just kind of smells a bit similar in terms of, I'm trying to help you guys here in a lot of ways, and you've seen what I've done for you already. That should just be a done deal. So it would be curious. And if he did move, Ellie May, would you still be Red Bull fan, or would you just automatically switch back to true Ferrari fan?
Well, he's not going to Ferrari anyway. That's fake news.
But if he did?
I mean, I think firstly, if it's rumoured that sort of Red Bull is sort of moving him away from sort of the F1 side of things, then you've got to think, well, why are they doing that? Is it because they kind of know that he is thinking about moving, and therefore they're trying to, it's so that he sort of has less information on how to create a Grand Prix winning car, I guess. I think that side of it's very interesting. I mean, you're always an Adrian Newey fan, aren't you?
Definitely, if you're called Eddie May.
I do have his book.
I think the fact of the matter is that if they're moving him away from their F1 branch, they're essentially putting him on an iteration of garden leave. If that's what's actually going on at Red Bull, it suggests that the deal between Newey and another team has already been done. Whether it's Ferrari or not is yet to be confirmed. But again, the rumour mill is being fueled by something, and it does seem to be a small morsel of truth when it comes to this one.
There's a small bit of the rumour mill being fueled by Ellie May taking 100 quid and going to Williams and just praying it happens so she can get rich.
At this point, it's not even putting a bet in. I will manifest this.
I was wondering how long I would be before that you used that word.
I will sit and meditate on it day in, day out, if it means I get Newey back at Williams.
Still, something that isn't speculative is something that we know will be happening this weekend, and it is the Doohan duo returning to track. Or I say returning to track, I mean, both of them are going back to track, but this sort of stipulates they've both been on there before, but they're not. It's rather more interesting than that.
Yes, both Mick and Jack Doohan will be taking to Albert Park Circuit ahead of the Grand Prix, with Jack driving a 2000 spec Benetton B200 F1 car and Mick driving a production MotoGP Honda RC213V. This will be the first time they've both been on track in these kind of different machinery, and it also marks 30 years since Mick's first title in 1994.
It's going to be so nice to see. It's some excellent, proper content for a change. It's not what five questions shall we ask about what kind of peanut butter Max Verstappen wants to be. It's actually something meaningful. And I don't know, I just always like this kind of thing of when you don't have that many father-son combos in motorsport, and it's just weirdly satisfying to see that in any way.
You actually have quite a lot of father-son combos.
Yeah, but like over the course of time, then successful that people outside of F1, if they're looking in, you only will know a few here or there. And it's unlikely that they're all doing stuff like this and all racing drivers. And anyway, but Mick and Jack is just going to be really nice to see that. And if you've been watching the feeder series for when Jack's been in there, Mick's always been in the garage and kind of like shunning away from interviews and this sort of thing because he wants the focus to all be on his son. So the fact they get to do something nice together at the home Grand Prix, and the fact that it marks 30 years, just really nice.
I'm a bit offended that 30 years ago is 1994.
We don't talk about that.
If anyone's going to worry about that, it's me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
If Back to the Future went back 30 years now, it's the 90s.
Yeah, that is the terrifying prospect. No, speaking of someone whose hairline certainly doesn't look like they're 17 anymore, Pierre Gasly.
Yes, he now co-owns FC Versailles, the third-tier team in the French league. He has become the third partner for the team alongside President Alexandre Moulier and Fabien Lazare. My French is terrible, so sorry. We don't quite know how much of a stake he owns in the team. Gasly doesn't want that sort of information disclosed, but he owns the club at the same level as the other two. Moulier actually drafted a list of top athletes and entertainers, etc., but Gasly was at the top of his list due to his love for F1, and they actually met through Charles Leclerc's brother, not Arthur, the other one. I think it's Lorenzo, but
They like the Wilson brothers, like Owen Wilson and then the other Wilsons that are also actors, but just sort of somewhat less known than Owen Wilson. You sort of have Arthur Leclerc, Charles Leclerc, Arthur Leclerc, and then third successful Leclerc.
Successful in his own right, but sort of not in a famous way. But anyway, the aim of the investment is to help the team into League Two. But on a side note, if you actually look up Alexandre Mullier, I think he kind of looks like the third brother of Andy and Jamie Murray.
What's his name again?
This week on Ellie May's Random Tangents.
Alexandre. How are we spelling Mullier? What is he known for?
M-U-L-L.
The French way.
M-U-L-L. Mullier. There we go. I can see a bit of Murrayism in there. Certainly around the forehead and the hairline. I can definitely see it there.
Mistaken with Murray Walker for people thinking about Murrayism and Murray Walker there.
Yeah, Murray Walker's hairline pretty much gone at this point.
Very gone.
Strange one. But anyway, no, I think it's interesting to see him do this because, of course, Pierre, big football fan as well. So sort of this is very much the coming together of his two interests and equally the two interests of the president as well. So it
gives him something positive to focus on rather than what the hell is going on with Alpine.
I was going to say, he's got a better chance of getting his money back out of this investment than the people that put money into Alpine have. So
there was a great comment I saw earlier today on... I forget what the official term is, but in the Paralympics, the wheelchair 100 meters that they do on the athletics track. Mm. And one of the comments was faster than an Alpine.
That was posted by the Paralympic Committee. That was their comment.
No, that was them. Someone else posted that and they agreed with it, I think, was what I saw on that one. I just thought that it's like it's. It's reaching a new kind of height or low, depending on which way you're viewing that, when other organizations are just openly mocking you like that.
If you want a good tongue-in-cheek social media account to follow, it is the TikTok account for the Paralympics, because they take their sort of levels of sport with really good humor, and you will definitely see the Alpine joke on there. We'll move on from a bit of the news to the Australian fun facts that lead into this weekend. And we've got one fun fact kicking around.
Yeah, which was the fact that it's been a while since we've actually had an Australian win the Australian Grand Prix, because it was Alan Jones in 1980, but unfortunately it was a non-championship event, so it doesn't really count, and that's a bit unfortunate. And it's kind of mad when you think about it, when we've had Ricciardo and Webber in decent machinery at least once or twice when the Australian Grand Prix has come around, that neither one of them managed to do it, and that the only kind of closest person we've had to an Australian on the podium has been Bottas, and that's just because he's become a weird honorary citizen to the country. But we do have a 2 in 20 chance of it this weekend, potentially 3 if I get my way. So, and Piastri is definitely the one to do it out of the 3 that I'm thinking of doing it, and it's not too mad a prediction.
I don't think Piastri getting up there is too mad of a prediction. I will say,
no, but I want to win.
Yeah,
I want him to be the first.
Again, I don't think it's too mad of a prediction. I'd say if we're going to mention Australians winning Australian Grand Prix, and given we've already mentioned Mick Doohan, probably worth remembering that Australia also holds a MotoGP race Grand Prix, and Casey Stoner was the last Australian to win that in 2012, and he did that 6 times over whilst in the process of winning 2 world titles. So again, if you want to find Australians that have won the Australian Grand Prix, be hyper specific about your definition, otherwise it's a lot easier to find winners of it, because I think Stoner's done it and there's other Australians that have done it as well. I think Mick did it a couple of times over. He did 3 times in 500cc. Then there's also the likes of Wayne Gardner that did it in the late 80s as well. So
again, I think
it's a Formula One podcast.
I was about to say that it is an F1 podcast, so I'm hoping that people...
Apart from the times you mentioned F2, F3, IndyCar, Formula E, WEC, Extreme E, all the other races and series, we might as well lean a little bit into at least one racing series that might have a chance of being interesting this year, MotoGP.
Alan Jones, the only Aussie to be world champion, or is there someone else?
There's been other Australian World Champions, I believe, but I just only went back for like winning the Australian Grand Prix itself.
Brabham, famously.
Oh, of course.
I mean, pretty hard to forget Jack Brabham on that list. Was it 14 wins and 3 championships? And then obviously his own team. Of course, his son David Brabham as well, who is now partnering with Alex Brundle to go to, I want to say, Spa 6 Hours later this year. So, yeah, some interesting names there.
Why has my mind forgotten every Australian F1 driver there ever was?
Because there's only about sort of 4 big named ones. The rest of them are people called Vern Chopin, Larry Perkins, Tim Schrenken, Paul Hawkins, Frank Gardner, Ken Kavanagh, Paul England, and Tony Gaze. Tony Gaze is probably relatively well known, but if you know your 50s yeah. F1 drivers, after that you go into the likes of Warwick Brown, Brian Maguire, Gary Brabham, and then David Brabham, who we've already mentioned, and then you hit Mark Webber, Daniel Ricciardo, and Oscar Piastri. And then Oliver mentioned Bottas with his incredible Australian Uber advert, which, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Incredible.
I thought that most of the Australian grandstands were named after Formula One Australian drivers. Could be.
Aside from the tone you used to say that, I just love the fact that you wait until mid-podcast to come up with these thoughts and ideas that would have been great to get some planning in for beforehand, so we don't have to double-check this during the recording.
Okay, the one on the main straight is called the Fangio Grandstand. Turn one, you've got Moss, Jones and Brabham, and then you get into Hill and Ricciardo, and then you get into Stewart, Button and Clark, Waite, and then Vettel and Webber, and then Lauda at turn 12, Schumacher, Prost and Senna at 13, 14, and that's your lot.
Ah, so it's just...
It's just
a no, basically.
Yeah. There we are. Glad we cleared that one up. If anyone's looking to buy tickets, very last minute to go along to this weekend's action, those are the names of the grandstands you can get tickets for. Moving a lot more relation-y to the race, our predictions and pole position. Timo, we'll jump into yours because it sort of carries on from our last point of discussion.
I'm being interesting with my predictions, which you could argue I'm always interesting with them, but you two just have gone far too middle of the road with this. You're really trying to actually compete with each other this year, and I'm not about that. I have gone for Oscar Piastri because wouldn't it be nice if he could manage it? And there's really all that needs to be said there. It's Oscar Piastri at home, and he's in a McLaren car capable of doing it. So case resting as to why I want that to happen. I know that's not necessarily how you should make predictions, but that's how I'm going to do them this year.
It's a bold strategy. I think he'd be the most underwhelmed the driver has ever been to win a race because nothing seems to just phase that guy. Just things happen to you.
I think he'll be excited when he wins a Grand Prix. It's just everything up to now, success-wise. He said himself in Beyond the Grid, which came out today, that you're winning the sprint was cool, but he's not there for that. Getting on pole is cool, but he's not there for that. He's there to win Grand Prix, to get titles, and he's just focused on that, and that's a good step in the right direction. And if he can put a pole to a win, then I'm sure he'll be happy with the pole because it will have put him in the best position to do that. But equally, if he qualified 20th and still won, I think it still wouldn't be too fussed about where he started.
We'll wait and see what happens when he crosses the finish line on both Saturday and Sunday. Ellie May, you and I have shared a prediction here for pole. I think it needs no explaining, really.
No, and you're trying to take my title, so I've now got to do this very seriously.
I'm taking this as seriously as...
Sorry, Ellie May, you could do this at half measure and still be fine by the end of the year, I reckon.
Maybe, we'll see. I've gone a bit bolder when it comes to my podium, but if anyone's gone bold when it comes to their podium, Timo, it's yours and you're continuing your theme.
I love how you didn't even name the driver for pole position, but everyone knows who it is.
It doesn't need to be written. It doesn't need to be said. Like the name of the Scottish play.
I don't know which one David Coulthard was in, but all right. Podium-wise, yes, Oscar Piastri, he's going to win the race and is going to send the crowd absolutely nuts. But then when they're just done going nuts, Daniel Ricciardo is going to come across in P2 and they're going to lose their absolute shit, and it's going to be great to see. And then Lewis Hamilton is somehow going to be in P3 out of all of that. So that's going to be a heck of a Grand Prix to watch and proof that you should have Australia at the start of an F1 season. And it's a shame, actually, while we're just on this note, that I'm pretty sure this year, after the debacle from last year, the whole crowd running onto the circuit to go and do the podium, they're not doing that this year. They've scrapped it, which is a shame.
When it comes to your Hamilton P3, I'm surprised you didn't go for Bottas. Go for the honorary Australian in P3. Or is this just
your employee? No, I'm a purist on the Australians.
So you've just gone for Lewis Hamilton instead?
Yeah, be nice to see him on the podium, especially with that car. It's not going to happen normally.
Fair enough. Ellie May, once again, you and I are sharing the man who shall not be named in P1, but then it gets interesting after that. We've both gone Hispanic for P2 and McLaren for P3.
I've gone Perez P2, Piastri P3.
Which I think is quite a measured approach. I think certainly Perez getting up there into P2 is... it's going to be a familiar position 50-50. For the boy this year. Piastri in P3, I'd like to see it. I think it's a bit more open to the elements, that suggestion. I've gone for Sainz P2 and Norris P3. I reckon he's coming back into this weekend with a lot to fight for and prove. I reckon he's got a mindset this year that's going to be interesting to follow. So I reckon he'll be pushing hard. He's had 2 weeks off since his appendicitis. He'll be coming back kicking and screaming, and I reckon we'll see a very interesting drive from Sainz across the weekend.
Coming in that bit lighter.
Yeah, he's got the weight advantage, same as Nico Rosberg when he used to trim the insides out of his gloves and stuff to get the weight down, to get the advantage. I reckon we're seeing
that. And do you know what that advantage that it gave him? It meant he could beat Lewis Hamilton in 2016, which you never hear about because he barely mentioned.
In equal machinery as well.
Yeah,
no, it's not the most interesting glove cheating thing that's come out. I don't know if you saw this come from NASCAR.
NASCAR.
Was the guys with red gloves. I was really impressed by that one.
Was it technically illegal, was it? And then they kind of banned it immediately.
It wasn't illegal.
Because they didn't think of it.
It was the fact
that... Because who sticks their hand out of a window to do that?
They all do it, because what it does is it stalls out the wing and it gives you a slightly higher top speed. But the webbing on the glove, the problem is that means the glove is no longer as supplied, which is also as certified for motorsport. So therefore, it cannot be used in a race. It can't be used in a motorsport environment because it's deemed unsafe. So very interesting stuff there. Go check it out. Again, NASCAR, really interesting series to follow if you want a racing series this year that's going to be interesting to watch. Essentially, anything that's not got F1 in the name, unless that's F1 Academy. anyway, Yeah. Norris for P3. I think that one's going to be an interesting one again. I think we've got a good race between the McLarens this year. And I don't know how he's going to get into the top three, but if he does, it's going to be exciting to rewatch. Which moves us into the fastest lap. And Timo, you're sticking with the same old until it happens.
It's going to happen, and it's going to be this weekend. Carlos Sainz is going to get fastest lap. I've been saying it for weeks now, but if he's going to get fastest lap at any Grand Prix, it's going to be Australia. Go back, listen to previous podcasts. I say it in each one of them.
Yeah, you've said it in previous podcasts for essentially 2 calendar years now, so holding that one as a prediction.
Your manifestation is poor.
You must teach me your ways.
Have you tried burning some sage?
No.
Give it a shot.
I fear I may have cursed him last time. I maybe poked the doll in the wrong place and his appendicitis kind of happened. So, oops.
Yeah, instead of throwing the doll really fast around a tube shaped like the Australian circuit, you accidentally just sort of stabbed it a bit in the wrong place. Ellie May, your fastest lap prediction?
Hamilton.
I'd take that.
There's absolutely no theory behind it. I just said, brain, who's going to get the fastest lap? And it said Hamilton.
And she looked at my prediction and went, yeah, it's going to be the guy in third place. Of course it is.
I used that same metric. I looked at my prediction and went, it's the guy in third place, Lando Norris. And yeah, fair enough. I reckon we're going to see an interesting strategy play and it's going to work. He's going to be on softs toward the end, really rub it in track and absolutely blitz it. And there's going to be a sort of Austria 2020 lap come from this kid. He'll be fueled by chicken. He's just been on chicken shop date with Amelia de Moldenberg. He's fired up and ready to go.
sentence where I understood zero words, then I'm really happy that I didn't.
You're clearly not as chronically online as I am. Anyway, wild prediction time. And we've all got a little bit interesting here, actually, with this one. I think mine's, once again, the most bland, double Haas points. But I think given their strategy always seems to be sacrifice one car.
They're strong around Australia as well.
Relatively strong.
They've had some bad moments, but they, when they're good, they're good.
They're good. And equally, their strategy at the moment does seem to be sacrifice one car to get the other one into points. So it'd be interesting to see what situation.
Maybe if they sacrifice both of them, they'll both get in.
Get points. Or what situation happens ahead that means they don't have to. I don't know. It's open to see what happens with that one.
Fascinates me about Eddie Mays is the first word, because the rest of it makes sense. But why did you need to have to add that bit?
Double jeopardy includes F2 and F3.
Yeah, not just no one DNFs. Absolutely no one DNFs.
I don't know why I put absolutely. I first was going to put absolutely
fabulous.
No one retires, which is what I first put. And I thought, no, that's not specific enough for Jesse. So I was like, absolutely nobody DNFs.
I see what I've done here. I've accidentally triggered her lawyer brain. And I think that's for the best, because we're going to see some really interesting stuff come from that. Timo, when it comes to really interesting stuff, though, your wild prediction,
it's doable.
You're going 2 for 2 on weekend.
Exactly. I mean, I'm going to say that Jack doing subs in front of the Alpine drivers and scores at least 1 point on debut.
Imagine if it is Gasly, though, because then he could end up 22nd in a 20-driver lineup.
And other drivers would look back at him and go, first time.
I mean, at least Ocon started in the sport when there was more than 20 drivers, so he's had the chance to be 22nd before. So he'll at least sort of have the tables have turned upon you, my French compadre.
And with my prediction, we get 3 Australians in the top 10 at the Australian Grand Prix. And that's something I'm going to have to go and research to see if that's ever happened.
I could probably do the quick arithmetic on that one.
Probably not.
I wager not.
No, they didn't.
So, Ellie May, you have between now and Sunday to teach me your manifestation technique so I can get this to happen and we can create history and claim it for the podcast.
We've had three racing at the same time.
Well,
but
this weekend. That's when the Australian Grand Prix is, Ellie May.
Well, no, not this weekend, because then my predictions will be wrong.
Yeah, but I feel like it's for a good cause. And it's not going to mean as much in China. It's going to be trickier for me to get 3 Chinese drivers on the podium in China. Come on. that's a tall order even for me.
But that's when the manifestation's working.
You have the right words with the CCP and anything can happen there, my friend. At which point, we're probably going to be cut off. And it brings us to a really nice point to end this week's podcast on. In the meantime, if you want any more from us, Ellie Mae, where can the people find you?
You can find me on the podcast Instagram, where I have been doing my Women in Motorsport series. Or you can head on to my Instagram page, where I have some photos of the Dukeries rallies, where I committed crimes against fashion.
What did you do?
I knew you were going to say crimes against something, but I wasn't sure where that last word was going.
So because of the interchangeable weather and the fact that it's been non-stop rain in the UK for like months now, I knew that it was going to be like Donington is pretty much all grass to go around. So I knew it was going to be wet. And the only jeans I own are baggy. So if I wear them, it means that I knew that they were going to get soaking wet and muddy. So I wore my walking boots and leggings and 2 coats. So, I mean, the leggings...
I feel like you've done worse crimes.
I don't think so. Leggings is the first kind
There's
of crime.
There's also a photograph of you committing this crime, so...
Well, that's how she gets away with it.
Yeah, she simply doesn't photograph herself doing the crimes, which is, to be fair,
she's not a new
smart
criminal. She's done crimes before.
You'd expect this sort of criminal behaviour from a lawyer, i.e. not documenting the crimes you're doing.
It's why I did a law degree, to get against, you know.
Gives you the head start against the other criminals.
Well, I can commit the crimes and no one will know.
And you could then at least also...
Until you confess them on a podcast.
Yeah, I confess them on a podcast, but there is no other proof Unless I'm in a photo in the background, but there was hardly any people there, so I doubt it.
Anyway, moving on from the crimes anime has committed, Timo, where can the people find you?
All the usual places, and basically everything I'm doing, you can find it either on Instagram, because I've got some stuff that I'm working on at the moment, but it's not out yet, so you can't look at it, but you can look at some of the interviews and content that I've made by going onto my Instagram page and finding it all there.
Excellent. And in the meantime, if I haven't been assassinated by the Chinese Communist Party, you can find me this weekend, at least, in Birmingham at the NEC fixing my car. And the rest of the time, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok as at Jesse on Cars, or writing for Classic Car Weekly. Our latest issue is out today on the day of recording. We've got a preview of the Resto show. We've got a look at a rare Range Rover barn find collection that's coming out to auction with no reserve. So if you fancy a cheap and slightly rusty Range Rover, there's where to look. And we get behind the wheel of a Volvo that has driven to the moon and back, figuratively speaking, at least. So plenty of interesting bits in there. If not, have a very fun Australian Grand Prix, and we'll be back with a review of all the action from Down Under.